Ours will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Oliver.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have a very special guest all the way from the Netherlands. His name is Walter van de Breden, and Walter was a judge with the IFBB starting back in 1977, the year I started bodybuilding, all the way up until 2009. So Walter had a very long career with the IFBB and with judging, and along the way he met a lot of legends in the sport, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, who he still has a good friendship with, Bill Pearl, Frank Zane, Boyer Coe, and Walter's going to talk about that today. He's going to talk about a lot of the people that he met in the sport, and we're also going to talk just about bodybuilding, how bodybuilding has changed from when he started judging until when he quit judging. So it went through a lot of changes in that 30-year period. So we are going to talk to Walter in a minute. Before we do that, I want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. Do you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential? Then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. Their certified and knowledgeable staff will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. So our show last week with Lee Haney and Rich Gaspari was a big hit. A lot of people really loved it. I thought it was a great show, and put it also on YouTube. So if you go to my YouTube channel, you can see the video of it, which I was able to add some video clips and some pictures. So that's really cool. So I also did that with the Sean Ray, Tom Terwilliger interview as well. So check that out when you get a chance. But I do want to read the emails that we got. I got quite a few emails. If you do want to email me about the show, you can email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com if you got any suggestions for the show. And I love to hear your comments about each show we do, just letting you know what kind of job we're doing and if you're liking the show as it's going along. All right, so I got an email here from Andrew Heffernan, and Andrew said, "Dear John, absolutely epic episode of Bodybuilding Legends Show this week. Hearing Lee and Rich reminisce about their history together was an enormous treat. Their mutual admiration and love for one another came through in every story and needling recollection. Haney came across as the tolerant father figure to Gaspari's fiery wild child, and both fed off the other's insights and energy. I love the story of Haney talking the guys out of jumping Rich at the gym and later making Rich apologize to his wife when they all briefly lived together. It's clear they still love and respect one another enormously, and they get a kick out of being such different personalities. Thanks so much for bringing them together and steering the conversation so seamlessly and knowledgeably. The champions of the sport respect you because you're a true champion yourself and a brilliant historian of that great era. Kudos. On another topic, at some point I'd love to hear about your decision to remain natural throughout your career. Tough choice or easy? Thanks again for a great show. Keep up the great work." All right. Thank you, Andrew. About the natural thing, I just did not want to take the chance, basically, of, you know, back when I was competing and my original goal was to win Mr. Universe, the IFBB Mr. Universe, because I saw Cal Scalak win that contest in the magazines the year I started bodybuilding in 1977. In fact, we're going to talk about Cal winning that Mr. Universe with our interview with Walter coming up in a second. But when I saw those pictures of Cal, my goal was at 14 years old that I wanted to win Mr. Universe, and I knew eventually one day I was going to have to use steroids to do that. So, yeah, I just got to a point where I just felt like I didn't want to take the chance of using that many steroids to try to realize my goal. Back in the 80s, there was only a couple of people a year that turned pro. It's not like it is today. So it wasn't really a health issue. I wasn't really worried about like what the drugs could do to my health, although that was always a concern. I just really liked the fact that developing your physique naturally means your physique is your physique and you don't have to give any credit to the drugs. It's just kind of, maybe it's like a control thing, I don't know. But I just liked knowing that my physique is all mine and it's not because of the drugs that I took. So that was, I think, the real reason why I liked being a natural bodybuilder and why I chose to go the natural route. So I hope that answers your question. I got another email here from Steven. Steven says, I know Samir was on for the 83 Olympia. Also, Lee was really on for 84. I just don't see either of their bodies beating brutal Bertil Fox. His body measures up part for part with both of them. I actually believe he beats Haney in many body parts, and the same with Samir. First, curious your thoughts. Second, would it have been Bertil not nailing his conditioning or posing, which put him behind Samir and then behind Haney? Bertil, I think, was, you know, obviously was an awesome bodybuilder. In 1983, I think he really hit his peak at that Mr. Olympia, and it was really controversial when he got fifth place. The crowd really booed because it was in Munich, Germany, and the people in Munich, Germany love size, and they just love Bertil. But, you know, when you break it down, and actually, again, referring to this interview I got coming up with Walter van der Braden, because he was an IFBB judge, we talk about how they used to have three rounds of judging with the IFBB. They had the relaxed round where they came out, and they would compare the guys relaxed just in the four-quarter turns, and they were really judging your symmetry and your proportion. And then the second round was the compulsory poses, which was the muscularity and the size and the definition. And then the third round, which was judged, was the posing round. So it really wasn't just who was the best poser, but who displayed their body the best as well. So Bertil may have been placed a little bit too low in that 1983 Mr. Olympia. I might have had him above Frank Zane, who was not at his best. But when you look at Bertil's body and you break it down, I mean, in those most muscular shots, he just looks absolutely incredible. And I remember when I was a kid and I saw the pictures of Muscle Mag International of Bertil and an Ironman also, when Bertil was winning the NABBA Universe in like 78, 79, or was it even 77? I think he won his first amateur NABBA Universe. He was just so unbelievable. He was so big and so muscular. He looked to me like the best bodybuilder in the world. And Frank Zane was winning Mr. Olympia back then. And I was like, man, Bertil would win Mr. Olympia. But when you start looking at Bertil from different angles, his side chest obviously was incredible. His front lat spread was not good. He didn't have a good back. He had a muscular back, but it wasn't very wide. And he couldn't really spread it in the front or rear lat spread. His thighs were also kind of straight up and down. Even though he had big calves and he had thick thighs and he was very strong, he didn't have the sweep on his thighs. So there was a couple of weak points on his physique, and he really just didn't know how to display his body. That was his big weak point. If he was a better poser or just knew how to display his body better, I think for sure he would have done much, much better. So I think really that was his big problem. It wasn't conditioning, because in the 83, he was very conditioned. And if you look at other shows, like some of those NABBA Universe shows, he was very conditioned. When he took second to Sergio in 1981, I believe, in Germany, the WABA Pro World Championships, I believe it was, when he got second, both him and Sergio were in great condition. He was really ripped there also. So it wasn't his conditioning. I just don't think he displayed his body as well, and he didn't get out of his body what he should have. Kind of like Paul Dillette, same thing. Paul Dillette had a great body, great structure, but just didn't know how to display it, and he was beaten by smaller guys like Sean Ray and Lee Labrada and Vince Taylor and Kevin Lavroni and Flex Wheeler. So that's my thoughts on that. But that 83 Olympia is very interesting because, and I talked about this before on the podcast, you had a diverse group of bodies. You had Samir, who was in his best shape of his life, not small, a big guy, but ripped, real shredded, and just great symmetry, great proportion. No one had better shape than Samir when he was in shape, when his waist was really small. And then McAway was second, and McAway really surprised everybody the year before when he was seventh in 82. So by 83, people caught on, the judges caught on to how great this guy really was. And he was a small guy, but he was very ripped, and his posing was, you know, the best on stage for sure. And he was very thick. And then third place was Haney, but Haney really wasn't at his best that year. He was only 230, as he said in the interview last week. He really hadn't reached his potential yet, which he would be next year in 84. And then Frank Zane was in fourth, and Frank wasn't at his best. He was too light. He had a shoulder injury that year, and he wasn't able to train as heavy. And I think Frank was 41 years old that year. That was his last Mr. Olympia. That was his last contest. So you had a group of different people in that top five. And I think, like I said, Bertel could have been a little bit higher. But, you know, and then he didn't take advantage of that 83 after that, too. He didn't compete at all in 84. He wasn't in the Olympia in 85 either. By the time he came back in 86, the sport had kind of passed him up. Haney was just too dominant. And then you had Mike Christian, you had Barry DeMay, and you had Rich Gaspari, who was looking amazing. You had Lee Labrada, and Bertel's career was pretty much done by then. All right, we also had a couple emails on the iTunes. If you go on iTunes, you can leave a review, and you can rate our show. So if you want to do that, if you're listening to our podcast on iTunes, I would really appreciate it if you take a minute and go over there to the Apple page and give us 5 stars if you love the show, and can write a review. So I got a couple of reviews here that I haven't read yet. First one was McCaff Kane, and this was written on May 20th. He says, John does a great job keeping the beat of bodybuilding alive and well. From history to training and posing, John brings the best guests to discuss the best parts of bodybuilding, fitness, and physique. John has a great conversational style, and his podcasts often feel like sitting around and having a conversation with kindred spirits. Keep up the great work, John, and thank you for keeping the classics of bodybuilding alive and well. And then I heard from also Byron33, and this was written on May 28th. And Byron says, I just got into the sport and I hadn't found much inspiration until I found this podcast. Even though I wasn't around in the 70s and 80s, I feel like I was now that I've been listening. John does a great job of shining light on the old days when the sport was at its best. And I truly feel that I'm experiencing a little bit of what I missed out on. All right. Thank you very much for those very positive reviews. Those are awesome. I also want to read from our YouTube page here where I posted I posted the interview with Lee Haney and Rich Gaspari last week. So that is now on YouTube, and I got a couple comments there, so I wanted to read that. All right. AV Gym Motivation and Bodybuilding said, Rich Gaspari and Lee Haney are always class acts, unlike some of the modern bodybuilders. Camille Cruzla Nikki said, once again, thank you for all of this, John. It's a piece of gold. CCP Bass said, superb. Lee Haney is a gent, as well as being one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time. Cool in Olympia said, great interview, the best. Rizzo61 said, this is one of my new favorites, best episodes on your channel. James Lucas said, great interview, I'd love to hear the stories. Mr. B said, awesome interview, John, I love it. I met Lee and Rich, they're awesome guys. Guy Graham said, who's next, John? Great interview. George Clooney said, an amazing interview with two great gentlemen. Maz said, great interview, John. Seven Archons said, absolute legends. I'll save this for the right time to fully listen to. It's so interesting. Matt Scuderi said, outstanding. Two champs in one interview. Bobby DeMarco said, thank you very much, John. Great job. Dreadful Zach said, job well done, John. Their individual interviews are great, so it was only natural to bring these two together. Bravo. And Maz said, Romulus was actually Czech, not German. That's interesting. All right. So thank you very much, guys, for leaving those comments on YouTube, for leaving the comments on Apple iTunes. And like I said, if you want to email me directly, just do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. I also want to mention, I just did an interview this last week with Dave Palumbo for the rxmuscle.com YouTube channel. And we talked about the history of bodybuilding. Dave has me on every once in a while to talk about some things about the history of bodybuilding. So we talked about the secrets behind the movie Pumping Iron. And so I just talked about some of the stuff that went on before the movie was made, like Arnold going over to Birmingham, Alabama and making Stay Hungry, and George Butler telling him he needed him in Pumping Iron. He actually gave Arnold $50,000. We talked about Lou Ferrigno and Franco and how they filmed the movie, Serge Nubre. So it's really interesting. It's getting a lot of hits. So check that out on YouTube under RX Muscle. And actually, Lou Ferrigno sent me a message on Facebook, and he said I got my facts wrong. He said that he did not train with Steve Mihalik, because I read in Randy Roach's book, Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors, I think it was the second volume, Randy was talking a lot about the movie Pumping Iron, and that's where I got a lot of my information that I shared on Dave's show. And in the book, it said that Lou was training with Steve Mihalik, and they stopped that. They said they didn't want him to train with Steve Mihalik. They wanted him to train with his dad, which was one of the storylines of the movie. But Lou said that wasn't true. He said he never trained with Steve Mihalik. So I emailed Lou back and I said, you know, why don't you come on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and I'd love to interview you and you could tell me what really happened. And he said, no, thank you. So Lou is not interested in doing an interview, at least right now. So who knows? Keep our fingers crossed for maybe sometime in the future it'll change his mind. All right. And before we get to our interview, I do want to mention my other website, johnhansonfitness.com. I'm starting a new fitness challenge. I'm calling it the John Hansen Summer Fitness Challenge. This is a 12-week transformation program where I write up a training and nutrition program for you, personalized, and I will be your coach for all 12 weeks. I will follow up with you every week, see how you're doing, see where your waist is at, if you're dropping your weight, and I will change your diet if I need to. I'll change your training program if I need to. And we did our first one, the John Hansen Fitness Challenge, this year in January. We started on January 20th, and it finished up on April 13th. But, of course, that got kind of messed up for a lot of people because of this coronavirus that was going on. The gyms closed. People couldn't train, and they had to try to train at home. And a lot of people didn't finish, which I was really upset with because I wanted to see everybody make progress and really show a great transformation. But I understand they couldn't finish because they couldn't train. But now that the gyms are open up again and a lot of people are a little out of shape and they want to get in shape again, I'm offering the Summer Fitness Challenge. So it's going to start on June 15th. That's next week. So if you're interested in doing this, I hope you go to johnhansonfitness.com. You'll see the program for the John Hansen Summer Fitness Challenge. Just sign up for it and we'll get you started next week. And think about it. This summer, if you're not in shape now, you're going to get in better shape every week over the summer. Every week, you're going to get in better shape until the contest ends on Labor Day, which will be, what is it, September 7th. So it'll go 12 weeks from June 15th to September 7th. By Labor Day, you will be in fantastic condition. So think about that as your incentive, and it's very, very cheap. So check it out, johnhansonfitness.com. I hope I get a lot of you guys to join up and get started on this and motivate you to get in great shape. And if you don't want to do it yourself and you know somebody, I would appreciate it if you would just share that with someone. Our last fitness challenge went really well. We had the three winners, by the way, the top three guys who made the biggest transformation, they got prizes. They got supplements, free supplements from Old School Labs. And they also got my books and my DVDs. And we're offering those same prizes again for this summer fitness challenge. So if you make some good progress, you're going to really clean up with getting some books, some DVDs, and some free supplements from Old School Labs. So all the details are, again, on johnhansonfitness.com, so check that out. And I also have the interview with the winner of the last fitness challenge. His name is Paul A. Liotta. He was 33 years old, and he's got like two kids, lives in Massachusetts. Paul's not a big guy, but man, he got so ripped. He made incredible change. It's unbelievable when you look at his pictures. And the guy who got second, Matt Craig, is 61 years old, and Matt has been training for a long time. He's got some muscle on him, and I met Matt at the Mr. Olympia Expo last year, and he was out of shape. I think he was like 230, and he was basically eating whatever he wanted. So we started the challenge in January, and he went down to 200 pounds, lost 25, 30 pounds. I think it was 225 when he started, and he built more muscle. I think he added muscle size in a lot of his body parts. And he looks unbelievable for 61. So it just proves that age is only a number. It's not going to stop you from getting in shape. And Matt Craig really proved it. All right. So that is it for our intro. So here is our interview with Walter van den Braden. And Walter, as I said, was an IFBB judge from 1977 till 2009. So we're going to talk some old school bodybuilding. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and I have a very special guest with us this week. His name is Mr. Walter van den Braden, and he is from the Netherlands, and Walter was a judge with the IFBB from 1977 until, what year did you go to, Walter?
2009.
Until 2009, wow, pretty recent.
It's about 32 years.
Yeah, Well, welcome to the show. I'm glad we could finally talk, Walter. I've seen your name on the score sheets on many of these old Mr. Olympia contests.
Yes.
So it's a great pleasure to talk to you. Well, tell us how you got involved in bodybuilding, Walter. What was your initial interest in the sport?
Well, I was always interested in sports. I was in athletics and in volleyball and soccer. But once in a while, I saw the advertisement of Charles Atlas.
Yeah.
97 pound weekly.
Right.
So I ordered that course, and I think it was in the USA. So it was a paper course, with all the different images of exercises.
Yeah.
But without weights. It was called dynamic tension, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I started to get involved in bodybuilding. I went to some shows in Belgium.
Okay.
And at the age of 17, I asked my father to drive me to Germany because I saw a German magazine in which he said there would be an IBB competition in Germany.
Okay.
But during those days, no highways, small roads. But my father was prepared to take me over to Germany with his brother.
Uh-huh.
So we drove all the way through the small roads to Germany, about 10 hours, I think.
Wow.
Attended the show there and went back the same night. To be back at home at early in the morning at Monday to go to high school.
Wow. What was the show? What was the contest?
It was IBB. It was organized by a man called Eric Bartel. But that's all I know. And it was a French guy who won the show. But that's all I remember. The year after, I saw an advertisement, the first IBB show in London.
Hmm.
So then I went over to London. And that contest was won by Al Gindi. He was a heavyweight bodybuilder from Egypt, Cairo.
Okay.
Later he became the president of the Egyptian Bodybuilding Federation.
Yeah, I remember his name.
Al Gindi, yes. So I think maybe during that time, maybe also Josh Eiferman was coming on.
Okay. What year was this, Walter?
Oh, my God. When year was that? It was about 1970, I think, something like that.
Okay. All right. Cool.
So, I think something like that, yes. During that time, so we had a boat from Belgium to London. So we took the boat with a couple of friends. And after that, I realized there was a bodybuilding competition in London each year called the NABBA Universe.
Yeah.
So since that time, I went to the NABBA Universe each year because at that moment, there was not much IBB competition in Europe.
Yeah.
So I met the first international bodybuilders from the USA, like Boyer Coe, like Colombo, Bill Pearl,
mm-hmm.
Chester Yorton.
Yeah.
All these guys, Larry Scott, he didn't compete. He gave a guest posing.
Okay.
So slowly I got involved in the bodybuilding scene, and the Weider company had an office in Soho in London.
Okay.
So that's where I ordered my first barbell set.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because the ones we used were made of concrete at our home. There were no weights available at that time.
Right. At that time, you couldn't just go to a sporting goods store and buy some weights, right?
Yeah, no, there was nothing. We made our own bench, but made from wood.
Yeah.
And that's we started the bodybuilding lifestyle. And at the same time, I was studying physiotherapy and manual therapy in Holland. So that was my main job.
Okay.
Bodybuilding was just a hobby.
You were a physical therapist for your occupation.
Yeah, and manual therapy. And later I went to Shanghai for studying acupuncture.
Okay.
And later on I went to orthomolecular medicine. And that was very interesting to me. Because then I realized what you can do with food, the right supplements.
Yeah.
And to stimulate your results of training, but also to improve your health.
That had to be groundbreaking back then because nobody was really studying nutrition back then, right?
Yeah. So I then started to realize how important nutrition is to stay healthy, but also if you want to improve your sports activities. Especially for bodybuilding, was important.
Okay.
So slowly, I got more and more involved and more in the scientific way of training, nutrition, and staying healthy.
Okay. What was that, the first NABBA Mr. Universe you saw? What year was that? Do you remember?
Well, I think that was about 1970, something like that.
Okay. So 70 was the one that Arnold won? Was that the one, or was it the one
with Pearl? No, before. Can't remember the winners anymore.
Yeah.
Too long ago, but I remember Reg Park, who became a very good friend of mine.
Okay.
I went to London, I spoke to him. And later he invited me to come over to South Africa.
Really? Wow.
With the IBB, we had the first junior world championships in South Africa in Margate. So I went with my wife and with the Dutch team to Margate and to Durban.
Uh-huh.
So I spent the whole week with Reg Park and Marion, his wife.
Wow.
And John.
Yeah.
His son and Janice, his daughter.
What was that like?
Reg was a great person. My God, he was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
But also very motivated. Not an easygoing person.
Oh, really? Really?
But he was, my God, he looked strong and he looked so healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
Just went to the NABBA Universe in London. I saw a guy walking on the street with a female. I said, hey, that's Reg. Yeah, Reg Park. Beautiful tan colored from the South African sun.
Yeah.
Not Reg. I still have that picture with my wife together. And then you can see this man looks healthy and strong together.
Yeah, yeah.
Just wearing normal clothes, no training suits, nothing like that. He didn't
That's
need
what
to
I like about the old-time bodybuilders. When you look at pictures of them, like Steve Reeves and Reg Park and Sergio Oliva, they look so great in clothes, you know?
Sure. And then many years, and you call Steve Reeves many years later, because I saw his movies in Holland, and I loved them, Hercules Unchained, and things like that.
Yeah.
So I was invited by Diana Bennett, who was a friend of Arnold, to come over to London to celebrate Steve Reeves, because what he had done in the past. So I bought a ticket with my wife and flew to London. And there was Steve Reeves sitting with his wife. And I talked to him. I gave him a pair of wooden shoes. Took some pictures. But then I realized that Steve was quite a tall and big man.
Yeah.
He was not a small guy.
Right.
If you look at the pictures of Steve Reeves, you see a very symmetrical bodybuilder. But if you met him in real, huge hands.
Really?
Big feet. A little bit similar to Arnold, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So then, of course, that was maybe around his 70s, I think, late 60s.
Okay.
But he was a very interesting person to speak to, and I was happy to meet him.
Was he a really nice guy?
He was a little bit reluctant.
Oh, really? Okay.
Maybe a little bit shy.
Okay.
Yeah. But I asked the other guys from England who knew him from the time he was competing, and he was always that way of behaving.
That was his personality, yeah.
Yeah, so he was not the man, you know, I'm here, I'm not going to tell you what to do. No, he was a little bit shy.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. When did you meet Bill Pearl for the first time?
Bill Pearl I met for the first time in Belgium.
Okay.
And I knew Julian Blommaert, the Belgian president of the IBB.
Yeah.
He said that you'd like Bill Pearl to come over to Holland to guest posing. So we arranged that. So Bill came to Belgium, I think, yes. And then he came over with his wife to my home in Holland. And he stayed with me in my home for about 2 or 3 days. Bill Pearl, a real gentleman.
Yeah.
My God, fantastic personality.
Yeah.
And always interested to talk to other people. And when he arrived in Holland, he told me, Walter, I want to see the Dutch mills. I never seen them before.
Yeah, right.
So we went near Amsterdam and see all the typical Dutch way of life. And he loved that very much with his wife, Judy, I think. Her name is Judy.
Yes. Judy, yeah, you're right.
So he did a fantastic guest posing in Holland. So he had was a real strong man.
Did you see him work out, Walter?
Yeah, and he gave me his book, you know. I think Pearls of the Universe, I think it's called.
Okay.
I still have it here in my room.
Yeah, the real big one, right?
Yeah, very big one. And he gave me that as a present. I was very happy. And later on, we invited Frank Zane with his wife, Christine.
Okay.
He also came over to my house a few days and do guest posing in Holland.
Uh-huh.
And the other one we had was Boyer Coe.
Boyer Coe, okay.
Always at my home. Few days and then went over to Holland near Amsterdam.
Okay.
For the guest posing. And we also had Mike Mensah.
Really? Wow. What year was that?
I'd have to check my calendar.
Records.
Yes. We went with Mike to University of Nijmegen. because I knew the professor, the teacher of the university medical school.
Okay. Said,
maybe you want to have a check on Mike Pence. He is the almost world champion bodybuilder. That you want to have a look at him. So I asked, Mike, you want to join me to the University of Nijmegen to do some physical tests with you?
Huh.
And we did some kind of medical test on him, like how the power in his back and the power in his legs,
mm-hmm.
which was not yet computer, but you could see how much power he had in the different muscles of his body.
Huh, okay.
And then I asked the doctor in which category he falls. Now, when you check, and he told Mr. Menzer is at the third level. I mean, the strongest one are the power lifters, second one are the weightlifters, and the third level is Mike Menzer.
Hmm.
And he studied close to the top two. So he was very, very strong.
Very strong, wow.
Yeah.
So is that all they were testing him for, was just his strength, his muscular strength?
Muscular strength.
Okay.
Yes.
So what year did you see Bill Pearl? What year was that? That had to be a little bit later, right? Because when he had his book out, I think that was in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah. I have to check that. I can't remember the exact date. But
Anyway,
was also during that time, I went for the first time to a bodybuilding competition in Holland. I think it was 1962.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 65.
Okay.
There was one guy coming over from Germany. His name was Arnold Schwarzenegger. I see him in the English bodybuilding magazine, Strength, Health and Strength, in Naba. Yeah.
This is 1965, Walter?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Wow, he was only 18.
Yeah, I was 22.
Okay.
So I think he was together with his mother. And I was warming up in the behind backstage in the small room. And he was standing next to me. Said, you are Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yes, okay. So I had a talk with him. I was 75 kilograms. He was over 100.
Okay.
At the age of 18. So he was strong and heavy.
Yeah.
How do you train? His English was not that good, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
More German language. But I remember he told me, and I asked, I think, what a crazy guy. He said to me, only remember my first name, Arnold. I said, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, Arnold. Okay. Remember, within a few years, everybody will know me. I don't know what he's talking about. He was right.
Yeah.
Now we know what he accomplished.
Yeah. That's wild. At 18 years old, he was saying that already, huh?
Yeah. And I know when he left to America,
mm-hmm.
Many times he was in Belgium for guest posing with Julian Blommaert.
Yeah.
So many times I went over there, but he left to the USA without any money. So he had a strong power and a strong will to succeed.
Yeah.
And he still has that.
Yeah, he does.
Kind of attitude to be successful.
Now, you became pretty good friends with Arnold over the years, right?
Well, we had a regular in touch with him, yes.
Okay, yeah.
I sent him a pair of wooden shoes when he was elected as the governor of California.
Oh, did you really? No kidding.
He wrote me back a letter.
Uh-huh.
I said, thank you, Walter. I need those wooden shoes, you know, to clear the politics in California.
Oh, that's funny.
So, and then I sent him a bunch of flowers after his second heart operation, together with Hans Bender from Holland. Bender is a German guy to train with Arnold, but he's in touch with me on a regular basis. He was a photographer within the IBB. So we sent him a bunch of flowers after the second heart operation about 2 years ago, you know, something like that.
Hmm.
He sent me a letter back. He was very happy to receive it.
Yeah.
Because the surgery went wrong at the very beginning.
Yeah, they weren't planning on doing open heart surgery, I guess. And then they had some problems, so they had to open him up and do open heart surgery.
Yes, he was very lucky to survive.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were all worried about him when that happened, I remember.
Yes.
So when you saw, like, let me take you back to some of those guys you saw training. You said Bill Pearl was very strong. Like, what kind of things was he doing in the gym? Do you remember?
No, I can't translate that into pounds. He was, I don't know, but he was so strong. And it's all natural. You know, these guys, looked powerful. It was not huge man, but it was very, very, you don't have to tell anybody he was strong. Look at him.
Yeah, you could look at him, just you could tell.
That was enough, you know, so yeah. It didn't to convince anybody else.
Right.
So, but what I have seen during all those years, international judging, have seen many, many good amateur world bodybuilding champions, heavyweight, fantastic, beautiful. I will not mention any name, but as soon as they turn professional, sometimes they became some caricature of themselves. Do you mean, you understand what I mean?
They got too big.
Too big.
Yeah.
Caricature of the former self.
Yeah.
And they looked. My God, I saw them some in Stockholm, everywhere. They were like a statue.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Everybody appreciated it. Everybody loved it. But then they turned into pro. Lost all their body symmetry. Too much mass. Too much muscular definition.
Yeah.
So I think that's a pity a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to talk to you, Walter, because you were around since the 70s. And you saw all these great bodybuilders of the sport, all these champions, these legends. And then you went all the way up until 2009. So you saw the sport evolve and you saw the sport change.
Yeah.
And, you know, you came from an era in the 1970s where you looked at a bodybuilder and you looked at his size. But like you said, they looked like a statue. They had symmetry. They had proportion. They looked really beautiful as well as being big. And then they got into the 2000s, you know, up to 2009. And then, like you said, they just became so big. So that ruined the look of their physique, right? Because it was ruining their symmetry.
Yeah, because even a man like Frank Zane, who stayed at my home, wearing normal clothes, he would just look as a normal person.
Yeah.
But as soon as he was in swimming ranks, my God, everything changed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and many people who were not involved in bodybuilding, and they love him, I want to get a picture with him together, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
So if he went to the pool and he was just standing there, people would want to take pictures of him.
Yeah. Also with Bill Pearl and with Boyer Cole. My God, Boyer. He was not that. He was big, but not that big compared to nowadays.
Right.
But as soon as he was standing on the stage, you must remember during those days, we had the biggest theaters in Holland. In Amsterdam, The Hague, we had 2,000 people.
2,000 people.
Wow. 2,000 every time, two times a year, in the spring and in the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember then, Boyer Cole came on stage. My God, everybody went wild.
Yeah, yeah.
And then another one was also very, and a lot of fans in Holland was Tom Platz.
Oh, okay.
You could say Tom Platz coming over within a week, 2,000 tickets.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
He was that popular.
Yeah, all the same with Lee Haney. Lee Haney came about maybe three times to Holland.
Really?
He was guest posing at the Rai. That's the biggest theater in Amsterdam. 2,000 seats. Sold out within 10 days.
Wow, that's
so crazy. Lee came over again and again. And Lee was also a fantastic personality.
Yeah.
So that we loved that also. That was great.
Yeah.
Of course, we have Ron Barry DeMai. You know, don't forget our own names.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Barry DeMai from
was
your
also
from
during that time, you know? Also looking real athletic. So I love that kind of time during all these athletes coming over from the USA to Holland, to Belgium.
Yeah.
You realize during that time, we only had the magazines, saw the pictures, but nobody came over from the US to Europe. Once in a while, maybe.
Yeah.
And then they came over to here and it was just a big party every time.
Yeah, right, right. I was telling a friend about that yesterday. I said I attended the 1977 Mr. Olympia in Columbus, Ohio when I was 14. And I said the people were going crazy. It was like a Beatles concert. They were jumping up and they were screaming.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, like you just said, we only had the magazines. So we never saw these guys in person. We never heard them talk or anything.
Yeah,
so when you see them in person, it was like it was crazy. You know, people went nuts.
Yeah, but you know, remember 77, I was in Nimes. In 79, I went to Columbus. In 78, I was in Acapulco.
Okay.
So with a battle between Skalik and Manson.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I was interested in that contest.
I'm not sure I was huge, and I don't think so, but I was sitting at the front seat, because I just started within the IBB, so I don't think I was a judge in Nimes.
Okay.
Then Mike looks so powerful, man. And then this guy, Skalek, my God, his upper body was out of this world.
Yeah.
And then he had the comparisons, you know. Yeah. It was between one and the other, what to do.
Yeah.
Wes had the total structure. But Skalek, my God, those biceps and pecs and muscle development was out of this world.
Yeah.
So they were very close. But I knew from I think maybe Rafael Satocha was there at that moment. I'm not sure. No, not yet. No. Jack Blomart from Belgium.
Okay.
Because Satocha came later, 82 or something like that. So I said, Jack, we're going to pick a winning woman. And you know, the audience went wild, you know, just standing straight out of the seats. One half wanted Skalek.
Yeah.
The other one wanted Mike Mensa to be the winner. So anyway, they had to make a decision.
Uh-huh.
Ben Wheeler was also there, Ben. And then Ben was also there. Ben, what to do? We have to make the decision now. And then at the end, I think Skalek won maybe by one point.
Yeah.
Very close, because it could have gone the other way also.
Yeah. Yeah, the story I heard, I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe you can verify it. I heard that when they did the prejudging, they had the point system back then. And I heard that Mensa outscored Skalek by like 10 points at the prejudging.
Yeah.
But then at the night show, they did a pose down, and they did it by placement system. Like, you gave a first place, and then Skalek won by 1 point because, like you said, the crowd was going crazy.
He was an amazing performer, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know how to play with the audience.
Right. Right.
Because I was in favor of Mensa.
Yeah.
At the prejudging. But then at night, this Skalek, his posing routine, many times, at these times, many people forget about posing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Skalek started posing, and everybody went wild. He said, what to do now?
Yeah.
This is amazing. Mensa was also at the same level, but they have to make a decision. It's a judging sport, so.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I saw Skalek in 78 at the Mr. Olympia, and it was the same thing. The crowd was going crazy. People were standing up, you know, when he posed because
he was competing.
He had that spectacular upper body, like you said, you know. I think people really love that.
Yeah. So in 78, I went to Acapulco, yes.
Okay, the Mr. Universe.
Together with a guy from Germany, Josef Wilkos.
Okay.
The heavyweight bodybuilder, yes.
Yep.
And then the next year I was in Columbus, Ohio with the Dutch team.
Okay.
And the first time I met Jim Larner was in Acapulco. And then later the year 79, I went over to Columbus, Ohio and met Jim Larner again. I stayed friends for many, many years. And still
here. So the 1978 Mr. Universe in Acapulco, that was the one Mike Mensa scored 300 points.
Yeah.
And how did his condition look in 78 compared to 77?
Well, Mike looked like a real Hercules type, you know, he was strong and everything was there.
Yeah.
He was big calls, underarms like this, everything was big.
Yeah.
But maybe, well, I can't say nothing wrong about him, but he was at my home, so, and in Holland, so it was very difficult for him to become a world champion.
How maybe come?
He needed that extra little bit of more, you know, more. Depth in the muscle, more density, maybe.
Okay.
There's some, you know, some things in your body, you know, that John, you cannot change.
Yeah.
Some kind of genes you have, and you can build up to a higher level, but then that's all you have. And that's also the way with many bodybuilders here in Holland and Belgium. I think you stop because that's it. Whatever you want to try. Any other anabolic steroids, whatever you think, you're at your level. You cannot do any more. It's impossible. That's my opinion.
So you can only go up to what your genetics allow.
By training, you can improve a lot, and by the right nutrition and supplements.
Right.
Some do take the anabolics, okay.
Yeah.
It's good then. Because talking about anabolics, here in Holland, we have one hospital in Amsterdam that has an anabolic clinic. Maybe the one in Europe, maybe the only one in the world.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. we have something on the internet now with the medical doctors talking about the use and not advising, but it's in Dutch language. Maybe they should translate it to English. And they are very open about it. So in Holland, if you have a problem with anabolics, you can check you. Or you're right or you're wrong. Mm-hmm. Of course, they will advise you to stop. But the extra advantage is that you have a medical doctor to check what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, okay, it's your own decision.
Yeah.
In Holland, you can. In Belgium, you cannot. You put you in jail.
Wow, okay.
In Belgium,
so in Holland, it's legal? It's legal to take steroids?
Legal if for personal use that you can do.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But of course.
Not in Belgium.
No, there is every bodybuilding competition in Belgium is controlled by police and the doping authority of Belgium.
Wow, really?
Every bodybuilding competition, they are there, I know.
Wow.
Yeah, because they don't like the way bodybuilding is done in Belgium and in Europe because of all kinds of anabolics and growth hormone and whatever you name it.
Yeah. What are your feelings on that, Walter? I mean, you were around in the sport from, the early 70s, and then you saw the sport evolve through the 80s and 90s, 2000, 2009. You were up, you judged until 2009. So you saw the sport evolve with all the drug use. What's your feelings on that as far as it relates to bodybuilding?
Well, I have to be careful what you say, but there are two parts of the sport. I compare it to Olympic wrestling, Olympic racing. Olympic wrestling, Olympic sport, but nobody's gonna watch the show.
Yeah.
Then you have American show wrestling.
Professional wrestling, yeah.
Lots of people come to watch.
Yeah.
I think the same with bodybuilding. If you want to make bodybuilding Olympic sport, and we were very near. I was in Lausanne with Ben Wieder and Raphael. At the very last minute, it was out. That was a very pity. But if you want to make it an Olympic sport, you follow the Olympic rules. But business-wise, you want a lot of people coming over to watch the show.
Yeah.
You know how people are. You want to see free things.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But in your preference, like what kind of physiques would you prefer? Because I mean, the guys in the 60s and 70s were also using steroids. But it was different. The physiques looked different. You know, you look at someone like Bill Pearl, Reg Park, Frank Zane, Arnold, and then you compare them to the guys in the 2000s. Which ones do you prefer? Which kind of physique do you prefer?
I would stick to the old ones.
The old ones? Okay.
They looked fantastic. Because when I now see the pro bodybuilders, there are some very good ones, but some are out of proportion.
Yeah.
What can I do? We are bodybuilding and looking at building your body. So I still prefer Arnold. Arnold, I've seen him so many times guest posing.
Yeah.
He was out of this world. He could have won the Olympia another 5 times.
Yeah, easy. Yeah, for sure.
Easy.
Yeah.
And now, of course, before his time, we had Steve Reeves and Reg Park.
Yeah.
And then later on, we had, of course, Dorian Yates and Lee Haney.
Yeah.
Frank Zane. But if I would have to make a choice after Arnold and Reg Park and Steve Reeves, I think we have Lee Haney or Jake Cutler and Yates in the heavyweight.
Yeah.
But of course, if you talk about body symmetry, you have Bob Parris, Flex Wheeler, Frank Zane.
Yeah.
It all depends which way you like. You know, like the heavy one or the more athletic looking.
Yeah. Was that hard as a judge to judge different types of physiques? Like you had a Frank Zane or Bob Parris physique, and then you had, Lee Haney or even Arnold?
No. I think now it's difficult to judge because they almost look all the same.
Yeah.
That's the main problem.
Right.
But during these times, you had, there was a difference in quality of muscle and density and the symmetry and the way of posing. So you could make the clear decision which way to go. But now with most of the pro athletes, too much too similar. But I still admire their way of training and the way they want to be involved in the sport. Don't understand
sure. wrong. Sure. Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Now it's more mass, more muscle, more body weight.
Yeah.
And that's why sometimes you see the big bellies. You know?
Yep. Yeah. So you kind of prefer then the older look because there was more of an emphasis on symmetry and shape. And it seems like a lot of people feel that when the drugs got more extreme, the bodies got bigger and bigger and bigger, and it really ruined the look of bodybuilders. It ruined the symmetry.
Yeah, and because, you know, because of those increase in muscle mass and muscle size, yeah, also the bellies are growing.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's even because some pictures you see then, you say, how can I tell anybody in Holland from the Dutch Olympic Committee how to sell the sports to official sports authorities?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not easy.
It's impossible, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And anyway.
So let me take you back to 78. We were talking about that Mr. Universe where Mike Mentzer scored that 300 points. You said that he lacked a little bit of quality. Do you think it was just more of like a polished look that maybe he could have improved with his training? Because I know he did like real low volume training.
Yeah, he was training with the heavy duty.
Yeah, the heavy duty.
And maybe, of course, he put a lot of size, but, you know, the real structure of the muscle density and the separation.
Yeah.
He should have changed a little bit more repetition, I think.
Okay.
That's my opinion. Because he stuck to, you know, the heavy training, the heavy duty, yeah. What you call it, only a few. Not that many reps, I suppose.
Yeah.
So he was more concentrated on the heavy stuff, you know?
Right.
Maybe that limits your amount of muscle mass a little bit. I think so.
Yeah. So the next year when you went to Columbus in 79, you saw Mentzer up against Frank Zane. And
yeah.
Do you agree that Frank Zane should have beat him because he had a better quality physique?
I preferred Frank Zane.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mentzer did really well. He won the over 200-pound class, and I think he actually outscored Zane, but then Zane beat him when they were compared together at the pose down.
Yeah, but that's always, you know, Mike Mentzer had a little bit blocky, you know, blocky, square. Yeah.
Right.
And Frank Zane was like a painting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he got starting to move.
Yeah, yeah.
And doing the guest posing. It was a work of art.
Yeah.
It was something like can do a paint of this guy.
Yeah, right, right.
It was like a Greek statue.
Yeah. Have you noticed that too, Walter, how the posing has changed over the decades from, you know, back in the 70s and the 80s?
Yes, I remember one of the best posing guys. There was the guy from Egypt, Mohamed Makawi.
Yeah, Makawi, yeah.
My God. And also the other guy was from New York. A small lightweight, I forgot his name. And Labrada was good.
Yes.
So they were fantastic, but Labrada was fantastic in his posing. But Makaway, if you can have a look at his posing at the internet.
Yeah.
And he walked on stage like, you know, yeah, man, who's going to beat me?
Right.
In high.
Yeah.
Abdominals, shoulders,
yeah.
Legs.
Yeah. Yeah,
man. Who want to beat me? You know, that kind of attitude.
Right, right. Right.
They came downstage, same attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I think he later moved to Toronto, I think, to Canada.
To Canada, right. Yeah, and that's where he was working.
Yeah, he asked Ben Weeder to help him with the visa.
Mm-hmm.
Because he preferred to live in Canada. And I think he still there is.
I think he still is there, yeah, yeah. So tell me about when you saw Arnold. You saw Arnold at his best. What kind of impact did Arnold make when he was on the posing stage?
Man, the man for his age, and 18, 19, 20 year old, he was so huge, especially the chest, his enormous bone structure. It was just amazing. Just it was only a little bit of warming up, and it was there.
Hmm.
I remember I was warming up a little bit, 20-25 minutes. Didn't much increase in muscle size. It was all about 10 minutes. And that was like, wow.
Wow, yeah. Just blew up.
Yeah, very easy for him. So,
yes.
So, well,
And Arnold had that charisma on stage too, right? Like Scalak when he got up there.
Yes, it was. I've seen him even, he came from South Africa, did the show from with Reg Park because he was close to Reg Park, you know.
Yeah.
It was Arnold's second father, you know that?
Yeah.
Reg Park. Because he came from South Africa and I went over to, I think, Brussels. I went to Brussels to see him guest posing. He was not in top shape. And at the same time, he had some kind of bandage around his knee.
Oh, when he hurt his knee, yeah.
He ruptured his, I think, his meniscus while doing guest posing in South Africa.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But even when he was not in top shape, even with that bandage, he could hardly walk a little bit. But he still did that guest posing. Everybody went wild.
Yeah.
He had that kind of charisma and also the size and the body structure. Yeah. Maybe once in 100 years, I think.
Yeah, really. Yeah, wow. Yeah, you look at some of those old great bodybuilders, and they all had that same quality where they, when they got up on stage, like Bill Pearl and, Boyer Coe, like you said, and Frank Zane and Mike Mentzer, when they got up there, the crowd went crazy.
Yeah. But I think we had some good ones in the Olympia. Of course, Ronnie Coleman is fantastic.
Yeah.
But Ronnie should have listened to his body more.
Yeah.
You know, I have a back problem, so I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So he went, he had the first or second lower spine operation, should have stayed away from the heavy weights.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a pity.
So but when you saw Ronnie, what did you think of him? Because you were around, you were judging when Ronnie was around.
I've judged Ronnie many times during the Grand Prix.
Uh-huh.
When he was placing only fifth or sixth, never higher than that.
Yeah. Did you see the potential he had back then?
I had seen that, but I didn't understand it all. It's fifth place, sixth place, maybe fourth. But then he was very strong and a heavy guy, heavy, strong, heavy bones.
Uh-huh.
But then suddenly he started changing his way of training and then he became the number one athlete at the Olympia level.
Yeah.
Changed and then it was just amazing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So it's a pity to see him suffering so much.
Tell me about when you went to Arnold's office and he was getting ready for Conan the Barbarian in California.
Yeah, right. I first went to the 75, I think. I went to California with my wife.
Okay.
Because I wanted to go there anyway. I just wanted to see it. So I went to the Wheeler building in Woodland Hills.
Okay.
Sitting out or sitting inside the building, but there was no time. I just went in. At the same time, Robbie Robinson was waiting there also. I didn't know him, which is kind of his girlfriend. So Gene Moosey was doing the editor, I think, Gene Moosey. He told me, Joe has no time. I said, man, I came all the way from Europe to just give me 5 minutes. So I waited 2 hours. And Joe came in, said, oh, okay, thank you so much. We had a talk and went eating together. So after that, I went several times to Woodland Hills and always could stay in his home in Las Vegas. He had a holiday home in Las Vegas, free of charge. I said, no, Joe, I don't want it. I said, okay, then later, just another story. Later, I came back home, I got a call from Joe. Walter, can you buy antiques for me in Amsterdam? Yeah, I don't know anything about antiques. So he sent me a big magazine to go to Christie's and Sotheby's. My God. Together with Ben Wheeler, and they said, I want this painting and this rug and this, and give me all the prices.
Wow.
So, oh my God, I said, Joe, I want to do, but I don't have the money, you know? Yeah, I said, well, don't you worry. So I trusted him. Okay, I went to Amsterdam. We're all always the highest price, thousands of dollars.
Uh-huh.
For Joe and Ben. So we all sent him to California. It was okay. I always paid everything. I never had to worry anything. So for me, Ben and Joe are great guys.
Wow. So they paid for it. They paid for all the stuff they wanted. Yeah.
Everything. So I went again and again. And they had a whole collection of antiques in their homes in Los Angeles and in Montreal in Canada.
Uh-huh.
So during that time, I said, I want to see Arnold. Okay. So Arnold was training just by looking at the Gold Gym with John Bailey from Iron Man. So Arnold was preparing for the Mr. Olympia in South Africa.
Okay.
So he was in full swing, my God. His muscles were amazing.
Really? Wow.
So maybe a few years later, I went back to California, rang at his office, you know.
Uh-huh.
Didn't make any appointment. So his secretary came down and said, can I talk to Arnold with my wife? Ask him. Okay. Oh, yeah. Go upstairs. Say, hi, Arnold. How are you? Okay. He had a nice Santa Monica office, you know,
mm-hmm.
at Santa Monica, yes. So I said, your long hair, why? He said, I'm preparing for a new movie. He said, which movie? Conan the Barbarian. Oh, really? Yeah, so I need that long hair, and he had some quite big, some kind of a sword.
Yeah.
So why this? I said, I need that for the movie. So I'm. So how do you do that? Do you know how to do fighting with a sword? Oh, it was a big stick, not a sword, a big stick, something like that. He said, I have a Japanese teacher.
Yeah.
Who's teaching me how to do sword fighting in the Conan movie. So then he showed me how to do it.
Cool.
So I took some pictures with my wife together.
Uh-huh.
So he was always very kind to me, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, later on I saw him many times in the U.S. or in Europe. So.
Yeah. And so you saw him in 75 also, like you said, at Gold's Gym when he was training for the Mr. Olympia. And he looked great.
Just by luck, so Joe, the secretary of Joe, Annalise, said, Annalise, maybe you can give a call because I never went to Los Angeles. I had a car to drive, but I didn't know how to drive.
Yeah.
So they took a taxi.
Right.
So they brought me to the Gold Gym. And he was training there at that moment. So with John Bailey.
Yeah.
Who was lucky, and with some other guys, with the family member of Reg Park family in South Africa, Isaacs.
Okay.
So they were training together there. I had them on a Super 8 camera, but the images are.
Oh, really? Oh, what a shame.
Are gone not anymore.
Yeah. Oh, too bad.
Yeah, too bad. So. But I always had good times with Ben Weider and with Joe and with Betty. With Betty, I still have good contact. Every year she sends me a New Year's card. So I'm happy with it.
Walter, I want to go over some of these contests. I got some of these score sheets from these old competitions.
You have that?
So the 1982 Mr. Olympia in London, you were one of the official judges.
Yeah.
Let me look at your score. So you had, it was interesting because they had three rounds of judging. Mm-hmm. And in the first round, you had Chris Dickerson in first place. Mm-hmm. And you had Casey Viador in second. And you had Frank Zane in third.
Yeah.
So you thought Dickerson was the best one that year, in 1982?
I think yes.
But I was looking at the different rounds. It was interesting to see how it changed. You had Dickerson in first, in the first round and the second round. But then the third round, you had him in second, and you had Casey in third at the posing round.
Third? At the posing round?
Yeah. I mean, you had Casey in first. I'm sorry. You had Casey in first,
okay.
In the third round, mm-hmm. And you had Chris in second.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it looks like you favored Chris for that contest, right? You thought Chris was the winner?
Yeah, maybe I was wrong, or no, I don't know. But anyway, during that time, we had Oscar Strait. He was a good fellow from London, and I left to work with him. And then he always calculated, you know, the percentages of the judges.
Yeah.
And then the next international congress, I don't know where it was. And he all the judges, how high they were in percentage, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I reached, I think, 82 or 83. So at that moment, I was the best judge in the world, Oscar told me.
Oh, really? Wow.
And he asked me to come on stage. I said, why do you doing that, Oscar? Yes, I have your papers here. And I checked him every time. And you have reached about 83 or 84 percentage. So now you have best judge in the world.
You had 84% based on the final.
Something like that, yes. I don't know how he calculated that, but he calculated every one of the judges. So
yeah.
That's what he told us, everybody.
Yeah. So that's cool. That's good to know.
Yeah.
What did you think of Frank Zane that year in 1982 in London? Do you think he was a little bit off? Because he was a little bit bigger that year, right?
He was a little bit bigger, yes. But Frank, yeah, was a little bit. Also, Frank had to be careful with him because he hadn't had the structure to be too big.
Yeah.
He was very light boat, you know?
Yeah.
Very small hands and boat structure. Just, he couldn't handle the heavy FMS structure. Then he would be out of proportion.
Right, right.
But he knew that. Yes.
Now, I wanted to ask you about McAway, because McAway was kind of a surprise that year. He came out of nowhere, and I noticed, like, every round you were, like, voting him a little bit higher, right?
Yeah.
Did it take a while for the judges to catch on how good he was?
Yeah, it takes. Because, you know, when you're judging such an international competition,
yeah,
you need time. Time to see what's happening. And many times you see more athletes getting better every 2-3 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Some getting down, you know? Some getting water.
Right.
Some getting more definition. So you need a little while to judge, and then you can make a final conclusion.
Yeah.
But also during these times, you had that pose down. And then mentioned again with Skalak and Mensen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very close because it's still a judging sport.
Right, right.
Of course, if there's a big difference in athletes, you know how to judge. It's not that difficult. But when they are very close together, it makes it a little bit difficult.
Yeah. Well, I would think with a big show like the Olympia, too, it seems like this happens every year, not just in 82. But mm-hmm. The judges kind of know, like, who the top guys are. And I think McAway was kind of a surprise that year because he was never really in that kind of condition before, except for when he won the Mr. Universe back in 1976.
But he was just, believe me, he was similar to Labrada, McAway, just him there standing on stage. Was kind of, here I am. What are you going to do? You know? That's what he was.
Yeah.
And he was a small guy.
Yeah.
I don't know what his body was, maybe 75, maybe 80 kilograms, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was just great. So then I loved it. But I think one thing maybe we can do to improve bodybuilding on a pro level, maybe to get them more money.
Mm-hmm.
A higher amount of prize money for the winner, second, and third.
Yeah.
I think if you want more personality,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
people coming from TV or, you know, the show business, if you have the winner, give them $1 million.
Yeah, wow.
That will be in the newspapers, right?
Yeah.
So maybe now the Olympia has maybe improved with Jake Wood, I don't know him, only from the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
If you increase the prize money for the pro.
Yeah.
Maybe you can get on a higher level of acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
when I was looking at these score sheets, I used to like how they did this because they would always put these score sheets in the magazines, and then you could see each round. And I liked also back in the day how they had the different rounds. They would have the relaxed round where the guys would come out and they were compared from the four different positions of standing relaxed, and then they would go into the mandatory poses, and then the final round was the posing. And I remember seeing the Mr. Olympia back in the 70s, and they would do all three rounds of judging in the morning. And then they would come back at night and then pose.
Yeah.
So I think that was a better way to assess all the different areas of a bodybuilder's physique, you know, the symmetry and then the muscularity and then the posing. And the posing was important back then, right?
Yeah, because that's an essential part of the competition, I think. You know, how you have to study it, you know what to do.
Yeah.
How do you perform? But many times I see these athletes on stage, I think they never thought about how to pose.
Right.
They're there on stage and then think, hey, what I'm going to do now?
Yeah.
Little biceps, side chest, latissimus dorsi.
Yeah.
Back, that's it.
Yeah.
Because you need the music and the right way of moving on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a little bit like a ballet dance, you know?
Yeah.
Something like that. So this should improve the posing routine.
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Not only the posing can make you a winner. No, this is a part of the whole judging system.
Yeah.
And maybe it can make just a difference between.
Have a whole round of judging where they're judging it and they're counting those scores where it's just symmetry. Mm-hmm. I would think, you know, the bodybuilders would focus more on symmetry, having that smaller waistline.
Yeah.
I would think that that's something that they would concentrate on because if they're going to be judged on that and those scores are going to count, you know.
But you need to practice it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to have experience. So as soon as you get on stage for the posing routine, your music is starting. And there you go.
Yeah.
No hesitating.
Yeah, look at the scores of McAway in 82. I would think he would do better each round, right? Because when he's standing relaxed, he's a smaller guy. So maybe people weren't expecting him to do that well. And then you get to the posing round, he hits the poses, and then his muscularity comes out. But then by the time you get to the posing round, he really shines there, right?
Everything changes when he starts posing.
Yeah, right. Because right after that contest, he was winning Grand Prix shows, and then next year he was in second place to Samir. So his career really took off after that.
Yeah, Samir was also very good. Samir Banu.
Yeah.
He was a winner in Munich, I don't know.
Yeah, the next year in 83, yeah.
You were judging in Munich the competition, yes.
Yeah.
You were also in great shape, also looking very nice.
Yeah, I looked at the score sheets from that. You had him in first place, so that
was
clear. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot all these papers. You have it.
Yeah, I got them right in front of me.
I cannot lie anymore.
Right.
It's all on paper now.
What did you think of Lee Haney when he first came along in 1983?
I think Lee Haney won in Belgium, isn't it?
Well, he won in New York, but in
the world championship,
Munich, he was in third place.
No, the world championship, Lee won in Belgium.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm sorry, you're right. Yeah,
I was in Belgium with him. I don't know. It was amazing in Belgium. I think Bruges, he was there. He came there, but nobody knew him.
Yeah.
And then he was standing there. My God, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
He was very powerful, but also very athletic because he's a tall guy. You know?
Yeah.
So I appreciate him very much.
He had that small waist too.
Yeah, he had that, yes.
Yeah.
So when we invited Lee to Holland Full House, always.
Uh-huh.
And he's a very easy guy to go get along with.
Yes. And he's a real gentleman.
He talks to everybody, has time. Pictures, okay. One picture, 10 pictures, 20 pictures, no problem for him.
Yeah, right. When you saw him at that World Championships, did you think that he was going to be a Mr. Olympia winner one day?
I think so, yes. He was, during that time, seeing him on stage in Belgium, it was just, everybody was just, it's amazing.
Yeah.
There was no doubt about him winning.
And he was only, I think, 22 years old that year, isn't
it? Very young, yes.
Good at that young age.
Yeah. I asked him during that time, I remember, I said, how do you do that, Lee, after the contest in Belgium? You say, you know, in the U.S., we have good food, good nutrition, and training. That's all I need.
Yeah, he was a great champion. We just talked to Lee about a week ago. So
okay.
Yeah.
Give him our best wishes.
Great bodybuilder, right?
Yeah.
So looking back over your long career of judging, Walter, what were some of the memories you think that might stand out? It seemed like you had a lot of good friendships with these guys because when they came over to the Netherlands, they would always stay with you at your house.
Yeah. Yeah, I made a lot of friends coming over to Holland and to Belgium and to Europe. So I had all of them. This even Larry Scott, I saw him in London. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I had George Heffernan in London, the old ones. And, of course, and Steve Reeves and Arnold. And I also loved Matt Mandendorf. You know, remember Matt Mandendorf?
Oh, yeah, sure. He came over to the Netherlands, too.
No. I met him in London, I think.
Oh, in London. Okay.
I think I was the winner at the World Games, I think, isn't it?
He got second to Barry DeMay.
I was second to Barry. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah. No, but I have a lot of friends every time I go to the international competitions. And this year I hope to go back again to the contest in Las Vegas in December.
Oh, good. I'm going to go there too. So hopefully I'll see you out there.
Yeah, because I was away from the sports about 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Due to the illness of my wife.
Yeah, sorry to hear about that.
She died about ALS within 6 months.
Oh, wow.
I stand at a fundraising for ALS in Holland.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, try to stop this terrible disease.
Yeah, it is a terrible disease.
So, this 3 years ago, and I'm back on track again. So.
Oh, good.
I'm sure she wants me to do it this way.
Yeah.
So I will continue, and I'm a regular touch with Paul Chua from Singapore,
mm-hmm.
where the WPPF organization there.
Okay.
And they have many countries affiliated with IOC recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So once in a while I travel over to Asia, because this month we had the first WPPF Asian Championships with prize money in India.
Oh, really?
Was canceled due to the corona.
Yeah.
That's one thing. Most of the competitions for Duarte will be canceled, I think.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you about Barry de May, because Barry de May is from the Netherlands, so he was like, he's your prize champion there. So did you see him when he was really young growing up? Because Barry was a good champion at a young age, right?
Yeah, I know him from the very beginning. So he went with me to most of the international competitions.
Okay.
So he was a beautiful athlete, so he was fantastic.
Yeah.
But the last couple of years, he stayed away from bodybuilding, one way or the other. But recently he came back.
Yeah.
Training again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But stayed away for maybe more than 10 years.
Wow. Okay.
So I spoke to him several times. But there was a certain moment he didn't want to be involved anymore.
Okay.
And now he's back.
Yeah. Yeah. He's training people and he's got
Yeah, training back. So I'm happy he's back again.
Yeah. He looks great too. He's been training.
Yeah. He looks very healthy. Very good.
Yeah.
Same like you.
Yeah, thank you.
Natural Mr. Olympia.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So when you look back over your career, Walter, were there any certain moments that stand out? I mean, I know it's a lot of years of judging and meeting all these great champions.
No. So besides my own job, because I made my money and my practice, I was still depending on bodybuilding.
Yeah.
What was my work? Because physiotherapy, acupuncture, and natural medicine. But what I appreciate the most is that I was in a position to meet people from all over the world.
Yeah.
Bodybuilders from all over the world. And when I came to USA, went many times to the Middle East, went to Asia, went to China, always had good feelings with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Always respected them, and they respected me.
Yeah.
It's very easy. So I'm very happy I was in a position to travel worldwide for many, many years, and I still do.
Oh, really? Oh, great.
So it gave me a wider view to the world. I'm happy for that. So now I'm old, and I look back, I said, well, I was in a lucky position.
Yeah.
Many people from all over the world, from different religions, different colors, doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
As long as you respect each other.
Yeah.
That's my.
Yeah. We're all in bodybuilding, so we all had a shared interest, right? So.
Yeah. Same level, the same feeling.
Yeah.
Same enthusiasm. It was like one big family.
Exactly, yeah.
And it still is, I think. So wherever I go, still have talks with. When I see Samir Banu, hey, hello, doctor. He calls me doctor. I'm not a doctor, but he calls me doctor. So always have a good feeling with all the guys worldwide.
Yeah.
So I hope to be back in Las Vegas to see the Olympia again. Maybe you will be there.
Yeah, I hope to be there too, yeah. Mm-hmm. When I talked to Boyer Coe, I did an interview with him, and I asked him the same question, and he said the same thing. He said it wasn't the competitions, it was the people he met. He said that's the important thing, you know.
Because at that moment, you know, the prize money was just a small thing.
Yeah, it was the friendships he had over the years and all the great people that he met, and that's what he remembers the most.
Almost, we paid these guys maybe $500 or $1,000 to come over to Europe.
Yeah.
But they were happy, and they had the travel free and accommodation free, and they met several people from Europe or from any other country in Germany, England, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That was a great feeling.
Yeah.
And now now in your TV program.
Yeah, right.
I didn't expect that to be. I was a little bit reluctant.
I'm glad you were able to join us, because it was great hearing your stories from all the old competitions, and especially some of those ones that you judged, because I was a fan of the sport as a young man back then, looking at those contests in the magazines. So it's great to talk to someone like you who was actually there.
Hmm. Yeah, because these days we have a little bit of an overkill because of the internet, I think.
Yeah.
Too much of things too good, not too much.
I agree. Yeah, it was kind of magical back then when you had the magazines, and it was.
Yeah, and it was always a surprise who was coming over.
Yeah.
I remember I sold came over Frank Zane. People were calling me. They were mad at me. No tickets anymore. Sorry, because we have strong rules in Holland because of fire and police coming in. How many people can get inside? 2,000, that's the stage.
Right.
You have more. We closed the theater.
Yeah.
Iron Curtain is going down. I told him, sorry, I cannot. We want to see Frank Zane. Boyer Coe and And Tom Platz, same thing.
Yeah.
Tom also a fantastic guy.
Yeah.
But we want to kind of, sorry, you cannot. These are the days of the past.
Right, right. All right, Walter. Well, it was great meeting you. It was great talking to you. And thank you for sharing all your stories of the old days of bodybuilding. And I hope to see you in Vegas this December for the Mr. Olympia.
Of course, thank you. You must know the starting of my work at bodybuilding was together with Jim Mannion and we win the million.
Really? Wow.
At the very, very beginning of this, 1977, yeah. Me and then maybe Mannion, maybe a few years earlier, and Wayne.
Right, right.
And once in a while, I still see them.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you could see Mr. Mannion when you come out there again in Vegas.
Yeah, give him my best.
Yes. Yeah. All right, Walter. Well, thank you for joining us all the way from the Netherlands. I really appreciated this interview, and I look forward to seeing you again in the future.
Thank you, John. See you soon.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Walter van de Breden for calling in all the way from the Netherlands. I really appreciate that. That was a great interview, and I hope to see Walter this year if I go to the Mr. Olympia out in Las Vegas in December. Next week, we should have Peter McGough. Peter was, of course, the editor-in-chief of Flex Magazine for many years, and he knew many of the bodybuilders very, very well. So we're going to talk about some of those years when he worked for Joe Weider and all of the bodybuilders he met, and some of the photo shoots they did and all that stuff. So we're going to have a great conversation with Peter McGough next week. I want to thank Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank all you Patreon donors for helping support the podcast. If you guys are interested in helping support the podcast, just go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the ad for the Patreon link. So check that out. I appreciate you even considering that. And keep your workouts going. I hope your gyms are open. And we will see you guys next week. And don't forget to check out johnhansonfitness.com for the Summer Fitness Challenge if you're interested in that. All right, that's it. See you guys later. Take care.